You know, there is no doubt that we are living through some unprecedented times right now in this country. From violence on the streets to autonomous zones popping up everywhere to hot topics people can't even talk about anymore without getting into shouting matches. It is very contentious. One of those topics is police use of force. My next guest is my friend Dr. Darren Porcher. Now, Dr. Porcher retired from the New York City Police Department as a lieutenant after 20 years of decorated service in various roles. He is also a nationally recognized expert witness in law enforcement procedures and police use of force, providing testimony in high-profile federal and state court cases and depositions. And there's a pretty good chance that you've seen Dr. Porcher on the news. He's appeared on Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, and a multitude of other places. He is a very busy man. In this episode, Dr. Porcher and I talk about police use of force. You do not want to miss this episode. Dr. Darren Porcher, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for tuning in. That's why we continue to grow, because your support, you're sharing it with your family and friends. Thank you so much. Big shout out to the brave men and women who work in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing. Maybe you're working in probation. Maybe you're a cop on the street. Maybe you're a deputy. Whatever you are doing, thank you for doing it. You do a job that most won't or cannot do, especially in these times. So watch your back, take care of each other, and remember, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the great work. We are so excited to be partnered with an amazing company like Detectichem. If you've never heard of this company, they are providing law enforcement, first responders, military personnel with mobile threat detection available for the palm of your hand. Now, this technology detects illicit drugs, explosives. This is must-have technology for your troops. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Detectichem. See how they can help keep your troops safer. Folks, if you love coffee, and I know the majority of you do because you're cops and other first responders, you're going to love the products from Four Sigmatic. Everything from coffee to elixirs to cocoa, they have it all. I'm a big fan of the Lion's Mane mushroom coffee. And once you taste this coffee, folks, I doubt you'll go back to regular coffee. And yes, I said mushroom coffee, but it doesn't taste like mushrooms. It tastes like regular coffee, only better for you. It tastes better. If you head over to cjevolution.com, you're going to see a link to Four Sigmatic. You will not be disappointed. And above all, you're going to get 15% off of your purchases using the promo code CJEVO. Folks, I want to take a moment and talk about my good friends at Bioptimizers. Look, if there's one mineral you should be worried about not getting enough of, it's magnesium. Magnesium is the body's master mineral. Powerful over 300 critical reactions, including detoxification, fat metabolism, energy, even digestion, is influenced by the presence of magnesium. But there are two big problems here. Magnesium has been largely missing from U.S. soil since the 1950s, which explains why it's estimated that up to 80% of the population may be deficient. And most supplements contain only one or two forms of magnesium, when in reality there are at least seven that your body needs and benefits from. That's why I'm so excited to tell you about a new magnesium product I've been talking about called Magnesium Breakthrough. It's the ultimate magnesium supplement, easily the best I've ever seen or experienced with all seven forms of this mineral. I'm even more excited because it's finally back in stock. Magnesium Breakthrough has been selling faster than the company who makes it, Bioptimizers, has been able to keep up with. It's already sold out a few times, and due to supply shortages with everything going on in the world, it could very well be sold out again shortly. Now, the CJ Evolution team was able to arrange for some stock to be set aside just for our audience, and I guarantee it's the best deal available on this product. Seriously, with volume discounts combined with our custom 10% coupon code CJE10, you can save up to 40% off select packages of Magnesium Breakthrough. That's an amazing value, and I promise that deal is only available on this specific website, www.magbreakthrough.com/CJEvolution. Now, you won't find that deal on Amazon or even the company's own website. This deal is exclusively for podcast listeners, and it's legitimately for a limited time while supplies last. They've also completely revamped their checkout process, and it's much friendlier and easy. Magnesium Breakthrough is the most effective magnesium supplement I've ever tried. Say goodbye to having to buy seven different bottles of magnesiums to get the complete dose. Go to www.magbreakthrough.com/CJEvolution and use coupon code CJE10 to save up to 40% off select packages to get the most full spectrum and effective magnesium product ever. Folks, if you want to feel better, check out Bi Optimizers. On to the show with Dr. Darren Porcher. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. So excited to have my friend, Dr. Darren Porcher, back on the show. Darren, you there, sir?
I'm here. Thanks for having me, man.
Well, thank you, brother, for coming back on. And for those of listeners out there that don't know, you know who you are, Darren, can you explain your background a little bit, brother, and what you've been up to?
I'm the sheriff of Nottingham, and I've been looking for. My name is Dr. Darren Porcher. I'm a former NYPD lieutenant. I worked in the NYPD for 20 years. Throughout the 20 years that I worked in the department, it was kind of bifurcated in two different directions. Mm-hmm. 10 years was operations focused. That's like patrol uniform, things to that effect. And the other 10 years was investigative based, you know. So did a multitude of different things. You know, I've done anything from internal investigations as a lieutenant, to, you know, being an instructor in a police academy as a sergeant, patrol in Harlem, the Bronx, South Bronx. I've worked in the Community Affairs Bureau. So I think I've had a multifaceted view or expertise in connection with the 20 years that I had in the NYPD. Yeah. In addition to that, you know, simultaneously, I tried to keep the education consistent. I got my doctorate degree from Fordham University. And prior to coming into the NYPD, I was an officer in the United States Army. Yeah. And now I am here on your podcast, and I contribute to a multitude of different media outlets, such as CNN, Fox News, and, you know, I just in court TV. And I speak to topical issues as it relates to criminal justice.
Well, thank you for your service, brother, both in the military.
And thank you for your service.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it, my friend. And tough environment, Darren. We were talking about it a little off the air. And you still, again, you're in New York City. You still have many, many brothers and sisters that are serving in this noble profession. I mean, I know it's a dumb question. I'm going to ask you anyway, brother. What's the sentiment out there with your brothers and sisters in blue? How are they feeling right now?
Well, the average cop in New York City is totally understanding of the protests, and they're willing to throw the uniforms in and don Black Lives Matter and FTP t-shirts and step out there and be a part of the people. No. On a serious note, it's a very troubling sentiment in the wake of policing, not just in New York, but I want to say on a national level. But when we look at what's happening in New York, we've just been experiencing like riotous behavior, which is, you know, precipitously dropped over the last couple of weeks. But we've had a lot of property damage, riots, protests. And when I speak to the riots, we have a case whereas people are rioting in the neighborhoods that they live in, and they're tearing down these communities and looting these communities. But at the same token, the people of color are the people that are losing out ultimately, mm-hmm. because many are complaining that the African-American and Latino communities have been the recipients of a miscarriage of justice that's been imposed by police agencies. Okay, that may be true in some cases, and I'm not going to doubt that, because when we look at it from a historical perspective, the socioeconomically impoverished are the most apt to receive limited services. Mm-hmm. Policing is a service that's being implied, but being extended by the municipality. I got that part of it. But there's a way that you protest and you introduce your ideology accordingly. I understand many people will say a protest is a disruption. If you don't have a disruption, you don't have a protest. But I also think that you need to understand if you go to protest, it should be done within the realms of the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. You have rights that are afforded under the First Amendment. Apply for a permit, you occupy a certain area, and your voice will be heard. And as opposed So when you block up intersections where emergency vehicles are unable to enter and exit, then it poses a problem to public safety. And we've just had there's been a war on police officers that's been unlike any that I've ever seen before. I go back to the 90s when I was a cop after the Rodney King verdict. Yeah. That happened in Los Angeles. I was in New York City. I was an NYPD cop, and we had people that committed to, I want to say, disputes, but it didn't really, it didn't revolutionize on a level of what happened in Los Angeles. Did we have some riotous behavior? I guess we did, but it wasn't anything that was out of control the way we saw it in Los Angeles. And then, you know, we've had, oh man, we've had so many demonstrations in New York as it relates to police, you know, issues in policing. We, you know, back in the 90s, we look at what happened with Diallo, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, Diallo was shot and killed by one of our plainclothes units, the street crime unit. And then we had the Amadou, we just had so many. The Abner Louima, when he was, we had an officer that actually shoved the, you know, he assaulted Mr. Louima with his nightstick. And now, granted, I understood that one. That one I understood. When I say I understood that, I mean I understood the public sentiment of being upset, because that cop went to jail for like 25, 30 years or something like that. But it goes back to, we need to address our issues in the proper form. I'm okay with the disruption being that you have a permit, you go to a location that does not impact on public safety, meaning you're not blocking a major pedestrian or vehicle or thoroughfare. Emergency vehicles can get in and get out accordingly. You get your point across, you get the proper press. But like what I'm seeing now, in the wake of what happened to George Floyd, I think you and I can agree that this was an overly egregious act committed by an officer that doesn't represent the values that have been instilled upon us as we were police officers.
Completely
and, you know,
agree.
This is not right. This is not who we are. Mm-hmm. And so the public has now stereotyped all officers as one. And you are part of that same subculture as a police officer that committed the atrocities against Mr. George Floyd. Therefore, we're going to give it to you just as if you were that same officer that had a knee on George Floyd's neck. And when I look at what the NYPD cops are dealing with, it's really tough, man. They're getting they're having cinder blocks thrown at them. They're being shot at. It's just been like a horror show. And there's no one in play to step forward from a leadership perspective.
That's what I was going to say. Is that I remember Rodney King too, brother. And I remember, you know, there was, you know, there was effects to the Rodney King, but nothing to what we're seeing today. And I don't know if it's because of now you got Antifa involved and all these other groups. But I agree. I mean, everybody, and I know you know this, and hopefully the listeners do, but the majority of cops out there, 99% of them are good people. Are there bad cops? Absolutely. But it's not indicative of everybody out there. And now it's just so hard to get. And I agree with you, man. I think it's a serious leadership issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is what happens when you have like things like when we have like, you know, a state of acrimony that's in existence based on what happened in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We need to have police executives, community leaders, and politicians sit down in a room and have a back channel discussion on how we're going to right the ship. The mayor de Blasio, his daughter is one of the protesters, has actually been arrested. So that clearly lets you know what his level of bias is. I just don't think that he's really stepped forward to right the ship. And unfortunately, we have a liberal governor, that being Governor Cuomo. Mm-hmm. And even he came out and said, Mayor de Blasio's leadership has been less than satisfactory in the wake of the current tragedies that the city of New York is experiencing as a result of looting and riotous behavior. It's real tough as being a cop. And then when we think about how tough it is, how that impacts on society is it lessens the pool of talent for applicants coming to take this job as we move forward. The attrition rate is going to continue. We've had precipitous drops in officers that have been part members of not just the NYPD, but we go into Atlanta or different departments throughout the country. Guys are just checking out, man, and saying, look, you know what? I did my time. It's time for me to get out of here. It's become a thankless endeavor. And God help me if I use force to protect myself or third party from being assaulted from someone else, because I will definitely now be victimized by the system in which I protect.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned people. I mean, you see it now, brother, in Atlanta, where I'm assuming it's happening in New York City. I know it's happening here in Colorado in some departments where you got the blue flu going on, and you got all these cops in Atlanta just, you know, calling in sick. Doesn't surprise me.
No, it doesn't. I just want to discuss that shooting that happened in Atlanta with Mr. Brooks. People have to look at it from the lens of being that officer in that particular situation. Everyone says that Mr. Brooks was shot in the back. And also, if he was DWI, why didn't they just lock his keys in the car and call an Uber or let him go home or just have somebody pick him up? A DWI is a non-discretionary act. So let's say hypothetically the officers folded the public sentiment and let someone else pick him up and take him home. And then he goes home and he gets into another vehicle and he continues to drive drunk. And then you find out that the cops had the ability to take him into custody. However, he went out and got into another DWI accident. They will have you hung by the throat in a situation like that. If the higher ups found out that you will cut somebody loose on a DWI and they went out and drove somewhere else and got into an accident, forget about it. Your career is done. You can even be held criminally liable in a case like that. But let me just go through this frame by frame. Mm-hmm. We have the situation where there's a 911 call in connection with an intoxicated driver in the drive-thru at a Wendy's. The employees at Wendy's called up, to say the least. This guy's asleep in the drive-thru. No one is able to patronize the establishment. Cops get there, and they say, hey, buddy, what's going on? It appears to be a calm discourse for 25 to 30 minutes. They ask Mr. Brooks to submit to a field sobriety test. Mr. Brooks is compliant. They do a breathalyzer. He fails the breathalyzer. He fails the field sobriety test. The officers make the assessment that Mr. Brooks now needs to come into custody. They attempt to handcuff Mr. Brooks. In the process of handcuffing Mr. Brooks, a violent struggle ensues. Mr. Brooks violently assaults the officer and violently and forcibly removes the officer's taser and runs away. The officers, understanding that, look, we have an intoxicated male that violently assaulted a police officer and now is in possession of a police officer's taser, presents a threat to public safety. Therefore, we can't let him just get away and catch him another day, like I hear people say constantly in connection with, his car was right there. You know who he was. Just get him at another time. No, the immediate level of danger is an intoxicated male roaming around in the community with a police officer's taser that he obtained by means of assaulting that officer. So that we can't do. So in any event, Mr. Brooks is running away. And in the midst of, I want to say, 2 to 2.5 seconds from when Mr. Brooks breaks free and he's shot by the officer, Mr. Brooks turns right before Mr. Brooks is shot by the officer as he's running away. Of course, you know, when you're running away from someone, your back is the person that is to the person that you're running away from. So Mr. Brooks turns and points the taser towards the officer and engages the taser. And you can see the flash.
You can see the flashes.
The taser. Yeah. Right. Exactly. That's a clear indication that the taser is being used. So now we have Mr. Brooks that one assaulted a police officer, forcefully removed the police officer's weapon, and he's now engaging the officer with the same weapon that he forcibly removed from the officer. So this is clearly an individual that has exhibited violent tendencies against a police officer. Yeah. Imagine what he would do to a civilian. But in any event, what the officer does is the officer is thinking through the purview of, look, Mr. Brooks is attempting to engage that taser towards me. If that taser engages, if it connects with me, then I will be incapacitated, which would now allow Mr. Brooks to take my second weapon because he already took my first weapon that he's using against me. But now he can take my second weapon and use it against me, which would place me in fear of deadly physical force, I mean, serious physical injury or death. Mm-hmm. And so what the officer does is he shoots him. Now, it goes back to the point of his back being to the officer. He was shot in the back. The reason why he's shot in the back is because he's running away. But exactly. He's also turning and using force against the officer. Yeah. So what makes it even worse, and this is the cherry on top of the sundae, we have an overzealous district attorney who is currently under investigation as of last month.
For fraud.
May, from the Georgia Bureau of Investigation in connection with he's running a nonprofit, so to speak. And with that nonprofit, he was siphoning, it's alleged that he was siphoning money for his own personal benefit. So based on that investigation, the DA is under fire.
Yeah.
So the DA, remember, he is a public official because he's elected to his office. The community is in outrage. They want blood and they want it now from this police officer. So the district attorney says, look, I want to get reelected. Granted, the Georgia Bureau of Investigations has not concluded their investigation as to what the findings of the shooting would be, but the DA has disregarded that and gone in based on his own bias and introduced this case into the grand jury. I don't know how the hell you can do that considering you don't have the findings of the shooting investigation.
What's interesting is that a week before, Darren, you know this, he declared, and there's videotape and there's tape footage of this, he declared that a taser could be used as a deadly weapon.
With the college students. And I was going to get to that. I saw that. There was like six cops in that particular situation. You're absolutely really right. But anyway, going back to this, what happens now is the district attorney does not have the findings of that case. And then how he's looking to save face is this. And I want you to think about what happened with Freddie Gray in Baltimore a couple of years ago when the overzealous prosecutor went in charge of the officers and got nothing in the back end. The district attorney here in Atlanta is putting this case in. And so if the district attorney doesn't get an indictment or quote unquote a true bill, as it's oftentimes referred to, he can pound his fist on a podium and say, I wanted these cops locked up and put in jail, but it was the criminal justice system that failed to charge these officers or allow an indictment. I did any and everything in my power, so it's the justice system that is the boogeyman. It's not me. That's one way that he's looking to save face. And the second way is because we all know grand jury can indict a ham sandwich. Let's say he gets the indictment, it goes to trial, and when he loses in trial, he can now turn around and save face to the community and say, look, I did any and everything in my power
system
to
is
secure
broken.
A conviction right in this, pound his fist on a podium and say, this was a miscarriage of justice to my office. I did any and everything to gain the conviction. So he's speaking to his constituent base, but he's not speaking to the reality of his office as a prosecutor being a district attorney. So he's clearly going from a perspective, and that's what I have a real problem with. This process lacks integrity. And if you can't see that, then I don't know what you can see. Ray Charles and Stevie Wonder can look at this collaboratively and see that justice is going afoot as it relates to the process.
Now I agree with you, brother. Talk about because you were mentioning the immediate threat to safety and officers, resisting, which he did. You're talking about Granby Connor. You let the audience know, for those of people who don't know what Granby Connor is, you hit it on it because it's objective reasonableness. What are your thoughts on that as regards to this case?
The subject presents a danger to public safety, but I just kind of want to go back to, you brought something up very important, and I just kind of glossed over this.
Yeah.
When we look at what happened here, I'm sorry, I just got to check it. When we think about Graham versus Connor, we now have a free. This is what I meant to go into. What very important point? The jury, and this is no ifs, ands, and buts. The court is going to have to read to the jury when an officer can use deadly physical force. Deadly physical force can be used when an officer perceives that he or she is in danger of a serious physical injury and or possibly death. Mm-hmm. That right there encapsulates, but it's the officer's perception of the incident. That right there will encapsulate the officer's justification to use deadly physical force. And the jury has to be read that definition, and it's going to be clear. Now, I'm going to give you the other side to this. Let's say the officer walks in and says, you know what, I just lost it. When that happened, I just totally lost it, and that's when I shot the guy. The cop goes to jail in a situation like that, you know, because he hasn't articulated a belief of a serious physical injury, him being the possible recipient, or him being in fear of a serious physical injury and or death.
Well, but I think the DA, brother, I think the DA was alluding to some, not those exact words, but if you remember in that press conference, the district attorney down there said that the officer said, I got him. And then he went, I don't know if you remember hearing that, and then he went.
That was at the end. That was at the end when he was laying on the ground.
And then he supposedly didn't render aid, first aid.
Right, right.
Exactly. To Brooks. And then there was some, and I he said that the officer, I was looking at the body cam, I didn't see it.
What's that? First aid.
Was, yeah, 10 minutes.
2 minutes before.
Or 2 minutes. And then he had his leg on the guy's
shoulder.
His shoulder.
One leg was on
like
his
that.
Shoulder and the other was on the arm.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if, in your opinion, in your expert opinion, if he's kind of getting to the point where you just said, where you're not using those words like, you know, okay, I screwed up. I just made a, I was hot headed, whatever. But I think he was going down that road that's going to throw that out the window. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. Now, with him putting his foot on his shoulder, saying I got him, putting his foot on his arm. Now, I don't have everything because remember, this is the Georgia Bureau of Investigation has not concluded their investigational findings. Now, if this was an egregious part on of the officer from a place of emotion, like I just don't like this guy,
sure.
And that's why I kicked him, that's why I refused to request medical aid. Then we have something different. Mm-hmm. Then I can understand, let's say, from a departmental perspective, okay, moving forth administratively. But we left this a critical juncture out. The mayor terminated the officer without due process.
Exactly.
Without a fair and impartial investigation. The mayor had this officer terminated. And that is a miscarriage of justice. So going back to what you mentioned in terms of the officer's actions, in terms of after the fact saying, I got him, kicking him, putting his foot on the shoulder or on his arm and not requesting medical assistance, there he can have a problem if it goes in the other direction of coming from a place of emotion. But if the officer can articulate the taser was still in his hand when he fell to the floor, and that's why he kicked him over, or that's why he put his foot on his shoulder to mobilize and stabilize the hand that taser was being held in, then he has a good argument.
Yeah, I just, you know, we were talking about this again, Darren, before we started, and I never thought we would be at a place in the country than we are now, man. And where do we go from here? And you're—I mean, that's a loaded question. So many different, you know, such a broad question. But I mean, how?
I got the answer.
How do we get past this, brother? And I don't mean that in an insensitive way, but how do we go forward as a nation? How do we go forward as law enforcement?
We roll back the clock, and we elect Mayor Bill de Blasio as the president, and we vote Donald Trump out. And that's how we can solve all of our problems. Just ask de Blasio, he'll tell you that. No, it's a slippery slope, man. We have to look at where we are with this, man, in terms of just the sentiment of policing. Who's gonna enforce the social contract?
Yeah.
You know, who's gonna keep our city safe? Right now, and I'm gonna this is what's gonna happen. Everyone is FTP anti-police. Wait till the next terrorist act comes. And I'm not fear-mongering. I'm not saying, okay, you know what? I'm one that's looking for something bad to happen in society. It's not if, but it's when.
It's a
that
win.
That next mass shooting happens at a college campus or a grade school, or that next mass murder happens. Then we're going to want the police. Oh, where are the police? The militarization of police is of optimum importance. We need to have police with the proper resources. We need to stand behind our police. I remember after 9/11, as a cop, you can do no wrong in the city of New York. But as time progressed, things changed drastically.
And you know,
changed drastically.
And you know firsthand, brother, from being, you know, being on the ground, you know, during the attacks, 9/11, you were on the ground, man. So you know the importance. You know the importance that you have to have those first. Everybody's running fucking away. You're running in. We need the first responders. We need the first responders. And so you speak from obviously just tons of experience. Now, really quick, what do you think about the stuff that's going on? And we talked about it in Seattle. It's unbelievable.
I think it's criminal what's happening in
Seattle. Oh, of course it is.
Yeah, I think what the mayor is doing is criminal, and she should be locked up, because she is introducing a litmus test on public safety, and the citizens in that city of Seattle are being held hostage as a result. That 6-block radius of a quote unquote a fun time zone. I'm willing to bet you when this thing ends, there's gonna be a couple of people that have been the victims of crimes that were unable to be helped due to the failure of the mayoral system, or I should say the municipality in Seattle. They took over a police precinct. And that was just, I can't believe that happened, to say the least. I can't.
Well, you know, from your background, military law enforcement, and I have the same, you know, military law enforcement background. Once you give up that ground,
it's hard to take back.
And you know, I just don't get it, brother. And it's just a crazy world we live in right now. But I thank you for taking the time, brother, to come on the show. I appreciate your expertise. Please be safe. Where can people find you there, sir, if they want to reach out to you?
Black Lives Matter headquarters. No. If you need to find me, just go Dr. Darren Porcher at Twitter. And that's probably the best place that you can catch up with me. You know, I post a lot of interviews, like, you know, I'm on Fox all the time. So I'll speak to, you know, you'll see my opinion pieces that are fact-based. I shouldn't say opinion pieces. They're fact-based.
They are fact-based.
And yes, absolutely. Supported by empirical data. And that's the best place to go to. And if you want to see who I am, what I do, and gain the experience as to what I speak to on national television.
Dr. Darren Porcher, thank you, brother, for coming back on. Thank you for your service to this great
country.
Thank
you for yours.
And thank you for your service to NYPD, brother. We will. I always tell people, we'll get through this. You know, hopefully we'll be stronger, more resilient, but we will get through this. We're at a moment in time.
Yeah, remember, you know, when we look at these violent road riots, that same cop that you throw a brick at is married to the nurse that works in the emergency room that is saving your loved one that is experiencing life-threatening measures through COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would love to have you back on, because that's another topic I'd love to love to dig in with you with your expertise and just get your take on that. So, any final words before we take off, brother? Anybody here, Dr. Porcher, if somebody wanted to get into law enforcement right now, what would you tell them?
I would tell them look to managing a hedge fund. Right now, this is a tough time. I wouldn't, you know, and I hate to say this, but I wouldn't recommend someone going into law enforcement. And I thought I would never say that.
Yeah,
I
was, I'm, you know, saying, I'm with you, man.
I mean, I bleed blue, but right now, it's just terrible, terrible sentiment, you know, and it just is getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
So that's my answer to that.
Thank you for coming on the show, brother. Anything we could do for you, please let me know, sir. I'd love to have you back on in the future.
Appreciate it. And stay safe, brother.
All right, you too.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.